Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Q2 FY 2023 earnings conference call of Five Star Business Finance Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Mahrukh Adajania from Nuvama Institutional Equities. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Yeah, hi, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the earnings call of Five Star Business Finance. We have with us the top management team of Five Star, represented by CMD Mr. Lakshmipathy Deenadayalan, the CEO Mr. Rangarajan Krishnan, and the CFO Mr. Srikanth Gopalakrishnan. With this brief introduction, I hand over the call to the management team of Five Star Business. Over to you.
Thank you, Mahrukh. Good morning, all. First of all, a warm welcome and thank you for joining the first conference call of Five Star Business Finance. Before getting into the Q2 performance of Five Star, so let me talk a bit about myself and my journey in Five Star. As introduced, people call me as Pathy. I joined Five Star in 2002. This is a 38 years old NBFC, started in 1984, lending to two-wheelers and consumer durables. When I joined Five Star, we wanted to move away from vehicle business to something new of its kind, a niche of its kind. So that is where we found out lending to nano or small businesses, single shop owners and self-employed, where we today we are truly fully present with them for last 20 years, very successfully in last 20 years. These profile of customers were not being seen positively by other former lenders, whereas we saw them very positively, especially the service segment in which we cater, essential service shops. So those are the predominant customers of Five Star. For last 20 years, first 10 years, we learned them a lot. How does we underwrite them? How does we set our collection model which perfectly suits them? So that was a learning curve for Five Star. And from 2015 onwards, our growth started. So we were growing close to 90% CAGR before COVID has hit us in 2020. During COVID, it was a conscious call to grow slower. So we were growing at 15% in COVID 1 and COVID 2, but we put our collections in front and we did one of the best collections collections among the lenders of this profile of customers. Now the COVID's all settled. We are back to the growth plan. That takes us to the performance what we did in Q2 of this financial year. I will rate this as one of the best quarters ever we have seen after COVID. Just to take you on the numbers, our AUM has grown from 4,639 in last September to 5,732 crores in this September. And from June, it has grown 8% from 5,297 crores to 5,732. So we have grown 8% in a quarter. And supporting the growth, the disbursement also has gone up from 568 crores in last September to 803 crores in this September, and from 353 crores in last June to 803 crores in this September with a growth of close to 40%. One of the good disbursement that ever we have seen in this quarter. And taking you directly to the asset quality, we have also moved our asset quality from 1.44% in September 21 to 1.15% in this September 22 with a sharp drop of close to 30-35%. And comparing to last quarter, we are almost flat in the asset quality. And finally, to the branches which led the growth of disbursement and AUM, We have opened close to 80 branches in last 1 year, and specifically within last 3 months, from June to September, we have opened close to 41 branches, which is one of the best addition of branches ever we have seen in Five Star. Finally, on the borrowing side, I think Five Star is sweetly positioned. The cost of funds keep dropping for Five Star. We were borrowing close to 9% last year. Now we are borrowing at 8.6% all in cost. And the cost of funds from the book has dropped down to 10.7% last year to 10.5% this year. So even going forward, we think our borrowing cost is going to be in the same range. So there is no need of transferring any increase of lending cost to the borrowers for coming quarters. So with these numbers, let me hand over to Srikanth to run through in more details.
Thank you, sir. Very good morning to all of you. As Mr. Pathy said, I think this has been one of the very good quarters for us, especially coming after 2 years of pandemic. I'll take you through some of the numbers and then open out for questions. So as of September 2022, our total active loans had grown to about 2.5 lakhs from about 1.9 lakhs in September 2021, representing a growth of about 32% on a year-on-year basis. Branch count increased from 268 to 352, which is we added almost 75 to 80 branches in the last 1 year, one of the most robust growth that we have seen in the branch additions, about 84 branches during the year. In the first half of this year, we added 52 branches, which is again one of the highs for Five Star in the last many years. Disbursements increased by about 127% year-on-year to 803 crores in the second quarter and about 1371 crores in the first half of this year. AUM grew by 24% year-on-year to 5732 crores. The ratios sort of remained stable. As of September, our average yield on the portfolio was about 24.19% for the quarter, with a cost of funds of 10.48%, resulting in a spread of 13.71%. Comparing this number against the quarter of September 2021, we were at about 13.5% spread. So despite a significant increase in the rates by RBI, our spreads have increased, and this has come purely on the back of lower funding costs. NIMS, very healthy at 18.2% for the quarter and at about 17.61% for the first half of the year, as compared to 15.94% for the half year ended September 2021. We have also been increasing our efficiencies. Our cost to income for the first half of this year was at 34.11% as compared to 35.34% for the half year ended September 2021. This has resulted in a healthy return on assets. And whenever we are talking any of these ratios, I would just like to remind you that this is on the basis of average total assets and not on the portfolio. So we had a healthy return on assets of 8.68% for the first half of this year, with a return on equity of about 14.66%. Coming to the borrowing side, we have a well-diversified borrowing profile with 51 lenders having lent to us. About 60% of our borrowings on the book today is fixed rate, so which is not going to have any impact in an interest rate rising scenario. Bank lending contribute about 50% of our debt. We pretty much have all the public sector and private sector banks on our debt table. We have also diversified our borrowings, not just in term loans, but into non-convertible debentures, market-linked debentures. We have done securitization transactions. We have also done an external commercial borrowing. So it's a well-diversified borrowing profile, both from a lender perspective as well as from a structure perspective. The on-balance sheet liquidity is sufficient at 795 crores as of September 2022, without assuming any of the incremental sanctions, which will help us to meet our growth targets for the next 2 quarters. As of now, we enjoy a rating upgrade of A+ from both ICRA and CARE, and we'll be taking up with the rating agencies for the possible rating upgrade to come. Over the last 5 quarters, the collection efficiencies have been showing consistent improvement. For the quarter of September 22, we clocked a collection efficiency of 100.1%. In fact, 3 out of 5 quarters prior, from September 2022, we have been clocking over 100% collection efficiency. The other 2 quarters have seen north of 98%. So The pandemic clouds have receded and we are back to our normalcy in terms of both growth and collections. While there was an increase in the 30 plus number consequent to the second wave of COVID, but we have been able to bring that down significantly to 13.62% as of September 2022. This will drop, you know, a little more gradually as we go forward. The gross stage 3 assets, 90 plus, stood at 1.15% in September 22 as compared to 1.44% in September 21. And we maintain a very robust provision coverage both on the stage 3 assets and on an overall AUM. On stage 3 assets, our provision coverage stood at a little over 44%. On our overall AUM, it was at 1.77%. Our restructured book as on September 22, we overall restructured a book of 1.83%, but as of September 22, it stood only at 1.18%. And even on this portfolio, we maintain a provision coverage of over 50%. So the restructured assets have seen post-restructuring payment behavior of more than 1 year. And, you know, north of 91% of the restructured book remains in the standard category. For the first half of the year, we clocked a PAT of 284 crores, representing a growth of 30% year-on-year. For the quarter ended September 22, our PAT was at 144 crores, representing a growth of 22% year-on-year. We had a net worth of over 4,000 crores as of 30th September. So we have delivered robust growth, profitability and quality for the quarter and the first half of the year, and are confident of this trajectory to continue for the remaining two quarters as well. You know, with this brief remarks, we open the floor out to questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may please press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants may please press star and one to ask a question at this time. We have the first question from the line of Shailesh Ganani from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. Also, congratulations on good set of numbers. Sir, first question on our 30-plus DPD book. It seems to be a little on the higher side. Can you shed some light on that, and also what can be the long-term average for 30-plus DPD for us?
So, you know, Shailesh, given the profile that we are operating, you know, it is important to note that these are people who are graduating from the unorganized institutions. So while they definitely get benefits in the form of, you know, better interest rates, more prudent lending practices, there is always an expectation of a little bit of flexibility that these customers would expect from, you know, institutions like Five Star. So that is why you would typically see a 30 plus number being, you know, a little higher. And, you know, historically, if you look at our numbers, these were always, you know, around the 10 to 12% levels, even pre-COVID. But what is important to note is that these 30 plus numbers are coming on a vintage portfolio. So it's not like people who are becoming delinquent early in their life cycle of the loan, or these are not customers, you know, who are going to continuously roll forward into higher buckets. So, you know, there are going to be some events in their families that could happen, which may make them miss one installment. And their ability to come back to, you know, a current bucket by paying two installments is a little, is not that high. So while they continue to service the subsequent installments, they may sort of stay on in the 30 plus bucket, or a 1 to 30 or 30 to 31 to 60 bucket. Rather than, you know, paying up the loan in, let's say, a door-to-door tenor of 60 months or 84 months, they may end up paying it 62 on 84 months, 86 months. So we don't really see, you know, a big risk as far as, you know, where we see a 10 to 12% kind of a 30 plus number. So like we said, you know, this would sort of hover around the 10 to 12% even in a steady state scenario.
So we are quite comfortable and confident that it will not get slowed down to 90 plus, right? That is a normal long-term average, 10 to 12%, double-digit number, right?
Yeah, yes, Kailash, very clearly our pre-COVID number, one of the best 30 plus what we have seen was around 10-11%. If you see from our presentation, it is moving from 17.6% in last September to 13.62, and from last June, it has moved down to from 15.7 to 13.6. So in next two quarters, by the March end, we'll be comfortably reaching the pre-COVID level, which will be maintained in the steady state, because as Srikanth said, if you want to really lend to these profile of customers, single shop and self-employed, they have some kind of cash flow issues for a longer, because our loans are not shorter. Our loans are 5 years and 7 years loans. During the 5 year cycle and 7 year cycle, we can't expect those customers to pay the dues in the month as normally you and me will do it. So you have to have some flexibility. That is where the five-star differentiate from others. We give the flexibility to those customers, but at the end of 90 plus, we ensure that flexibility is not given. So hence that our 90 plus is one of the lowest in the market.
Okay. Thanks, sir. Sir, one more question. One is on the yield front. Our yield seems to be pretty impressive at 24 to 26%. Again, if you can shed some light or give some long-term guidance, how is the competitive landscape, and can we sustain on to this kind of attractive yield on our book? Can you give your view on this?
Shailesh, I think if you again trace back in the presentation, we have given you our numbers from FY15, the yields have, broadly ranged anywhere from around 24 to 25%. See, the first thing to note is, these are people who are graduating from unorganized institutions. So the price sensitivity is not that high. And given that we are lending for 5 to 7 years, a percentage increase in the yield or a percentage decrease in the yield leads them to about 80 to 100 rupees of difference in EMI. So it's not a very highly price sensitive segment, number one. The second point is, having said that, we would always like to be a, responsible lender. So our focus is not so much on the yields, but it is more on the spreads that we want. So even in the past, if you look at, we have been operating at a spread of about 12 to 13%, while it is a little high at this point of time, given our drop in cost of funds. But in an ideal scenario, we would have passed on some of these things to the customers, but today, the interest rate cycle is still a little bit uncertain out there. So we would like that to sort of stabilize before we take a call on passing on some of these benefits to the borrowers. So we can clearly say that our focus will be on the spreads, and we would like to maintain our spreads at about 12 to 13% in the, in the quarters to come. We are confident of maintaining that.
So basically, I wanted to see if there is any change in competitive landscape, and are we facing on any pressures on from the client side with respect to interest rates per se, right? There is nothing like that, right?
Yeah, Shailesh, there is absolutely nothing that we are seeing at this point of time from a competitive landscape. Most players who are exclusively focused on this segment are around similar levels. There is nothing specific from a competitive landscape. It's more an internal call. Like Srikanth put it, we will be a responsible lender. So as we see benefits that is accruing to us because of lowering borrowing costs, we will pass that to the customer, but it's not because of a competitive pressure.
See, let me also add to what Ranga said. There's a perception in the market that Five Star is been in lending to a overcrowded market. Let me be very, very clear. As I said, this is a very niche segment where we don't compete taking the files from other NBFCs and other small finance banks. We take the files from unorganized lenders, which is money lenders and borrowing from friends and families. So that is our niche. And in fact, we are operating in a very less competitive market. That's the truth. So why I'm saying this is, let's not put SME lending or MSME lending or a small business lending in one basket. It ranges from close to 1 lakh to 10 crores. It's been called as small business loans. What is special on Five Star is, we are operating at 3 lakh to 5 lakh ticket size. And we are operating at 5 years to 7 year tenure, which most of the people are not willing to operate.
because of the operating cost increase, and they don't have that kind of underwriting experience what we have. So we are participating in a less crowded market. Even within the less crowded market, Five-Star stands tall, both in quality and profitability if you compare with our competitors. So I don't see any big competitive intensity is going to grow up. And we are welcome for that because here we don't want to be the watchmans for this sector. People will come. We want them to come. But they have to lend and see that our asset quality and profitability stacks up the time.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Pranav Gupta from Ask Investment Managers. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, sir. Good morning. Just a couple of questions, probably a continuation from the previous one. So you said that most of your customers, you are taking files from the unorganized lenders, and these customers are not rate sensitive and our tenures are typically 5 to 7 years. So just wanted to understand that the natural progression for the customer, you know, taking a loan from Five-Star eventually is to move on to a NBFC or a larger ticket size or a bank. So what is, could you help us with, you know, if, what is our repeat rate once a customer repays and what is the natural progression from our, for our customer? That is the first question.
So Pranav, I will take it. So essentially when a customer walks into Five-Star and then he has a loan track record, it's not just that he is building a track record with Five-Star and it's automatically can be taken over by a larger institution. Because while he will have a track record, he will still not have documentary proofs of income for somebody to easily assess that customer. 60% of our repayment comes back in cash. How many institutions will have the muscle and the ability to collect cash collections, you know, in a operationally robust manner is still questionable. That is second. Third, these are customers, like we have pointed out, they are not going to exactly pay on the due date. There will be some delays. These are earn and pay customers. We have seen them operating over the last 20 years. So there is a very clear track record for us and an experience for us as to how these people will behave. So which means we are okay with some operational delays as long as it's not translating into credit defaults. But if you were to look at the credit bureau scores of these customers, it's not going to be one of the, you know, one of the best track record that they're going to have where they're going to have an automatic debit from their bank accounts exactly on the due date. So it is not a very easily tappable customer segment for a larger player. And most importantly, what we have also seen from the market, this is what Mr. Pathy was pointing out a little while earlier, is that majority of the large players, be it NBFCs or banks, we have seen them having some kind of a resistance for coming down on the ticket size to this level. So they believe that probably it's operationally too intensive or maybe economically doesn't make sense given their cost structure for them to come down to this level. So given all that, it's not an automatic ladder in which customer comes to Five-Star and then 5 years later he is being taken over by somebody else. There are a lot of nuances in this segment. But that said, I think if you were to give you a guidance overall in terms of the way that it moves, out of every 100 customers that you know we pick up from the unorganized lending to organized segment where they are coming in with 5 stars for the first time, we have always seen about 10% of the customers graduating upwards. So they are extremely good, paying exactly on the due dates, have operating bank accounts, there are no delays, have a good track record, their business improves, they have a larger appetite for a you know higher ticket loan, and then they graduate up and move towards a larger NBFC or a bank. We have also seen the reverse. We have seen about 10% of the customers going back to money lenders because they are not used to this rigor or discipline of exactly paying on the due date. But if you had to take the rest of the 75-80%, you know, there are a, you know, they stay with Five-Star because we understand them, they understand us, there is a comfort level, there is an extremely good service that we provide to them. So these are customers who will take a loan from us, who will part prepay, you know, when they have access to good chunkier cash flows, they will take a loan again from Five-Star whenever there is a need.
Okay, so essentially you're saying that barely 10% of our customers are eventually graduating even after 5-7 years.
Yeah.
They are unable or unwilling, either of the two, to move to a larger ticket size or a lower rate. Because, I mean, it's slightly surprising to see that, you know, even after a 5 or 7 year loan, a customer is still coming to borrow 3 to 5 lakhs. Again from 5-Star at a 24% yield.
Yeah, sir. I agree. Pranav, I think, you know, I understand where you are coming in from, but the issue is not about the rates. The issue is about how do you assess those customers. So how many people have developed the capabilities today to go deeper and actually assess the cash flows and the collateral values of these people at a tier 6 town, you know, where you are not going to depend on any intermediaries to do this and probably spend about 4 to 5 days on the field just gathering primary data points. So the issue is not about the rates. I think anybody can lend at lower rates, but the issue is, are you willing to put this operationally intensive efforts to go down to that point?
Sure. So could you quantify, if possible, what is our balance transfer outs? That would sort of help to understand.
So Pranav, the balance transfer outs are very low. We should be seeing balance transfer outs of anything between 3 to 5%. But I think this needs to be correlated with the balance transfer ins as well, because there are people, you know, who are coming from other institutions to 5-star also, where we see the numbers are more like about 6 to 8%. So from that perspective, there is a positive balance transfer in. So most of the, prepayments, most of the closures that we see on the portfolio are actually closures happening out of the own sources of borrowers rather than balance transfers. So today the balance transfers are much lower, and 5-star has a positive edge from a balance transfer perspective.
So what are the kind of customers that transfer into 5-star? Where are these customers coming from?
They will come from other NBFCs mostly, but generally the balance transfer is not just a transfer of outstanding loan. They will also expect a top-up on top of that loan. So maybe, you know, they would have originally taken a loan of about 5 lakhs. Today the current outstanding could be 3 lakhs. They may have a track record of whatever, 1 or 2 years with an existing NBFC. So they may look to top up back to 5 lakhs or maybe 5.5 lakhs, depending on, you know, what their requirement is at this point of time. So if you are able to assess those customers and, you know, they come within your risk bracket, it's a balance transfer plus a top up. So that's the attraction for customers to walk into 5-star.
Just a last follow-up on this before I join back in the queue. So, I mean, if I look at this example that you gave, that, you know, a customer has borrowed from another NBFC and eventually wants a top-up and has come to 5-star. Two issues here. A, there is another NBFC or multiple other NBFCs who have actually assessed that customer, are willing to lend, are willing to collect from that customer in whatever way or form required. And B, if they have already assessed the customer, why are they not willing to top his loan up if he's a good customer? And if he's not a good customer, then why is 5-star assessing him and taking him? That's the sort of point I'm trying to understand.
Yeah. Fair point, Pranav. I don't think, you know, we ever sort of have this idea that we are the only player in this segment. But if you look at, what Srikant has answered, the balance transfers in are hardly about 1 to 2%. So this is not a large people who are just graduating from other NBFCs to us. But it all we are trying to say is that it does exist. And, you know, there could be various reasons why an existing NBFC is not willing to give more to them. Maybe if this is not a focus segment, maybe, you know, the relationship manager has not reached out to them, whatever it could be. But it's a very small trickling segment which will come out. And we are not going to have an automatic program.
Sorry to interrupt you, sir. Just wanted to reconfirm if I heard the number wrong, because I had heard 7 to 8%. Did I hear that wrong? You said 1 to 2.
Yeah, the net.
Ranga is talking about 6 to 8% minus 3 to 5%.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Sorry, go on, sir. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, so it will come, but it's not a very significant focus segment. And, just to clarify, we don't have a programmatic, automatic kind of a top-up loan program wherein anybody who is coming in from other NBFCs, we are giving them 50% higher or anything. Only if it fits within our risk profile bucket area of operations, we might want to do that. This is not a key segment, but, you know, that said, I think people will come down, and depending on operational efficiencies that we can track, we will there will always be people who will walk in.
So just to end this question, as I said in the opening remarks, that our business model is not to get files from other NBFCs and other small finance bank, but we want to disturb the money lending market and bring the customer from informal to formal. That is our core. That is where our focus, concentration, all will be there. Incrementally, if a customer is walking from other NBFCs to us, we don't stop that.
Sure, sir. Understood. Thank you so much for patiently answering. I have more questions, but I'll take it offline.
Thank you, Pranav.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Umang Shah from Kotak Mutual Fund. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question and congratulations to the team for a good quarter. Just a couple of them that I have. One is on restructured loans. Just wanted to confirm the current outstanding book is at about 1.2%. And in the opening remarks, Srikanth mentioned it has improved from 1.8%. That was in the previous quarter, is it? Or
no, no. So when we restructured the book in the first and second quarters of last financial year, we had done a consolidated restructuring of 1.86% of the book at that point of time. So the overall number was about 83-84 crores. The outstanding on that is about 1.18% of the current portfolio, which is at about 65 crores.
Sure. That's helpful. And any particular reason why we are holding like 50% provisions on these loans, given the fact that our stage 3 provision cover itself is about 44%? And also if you could help me, where exactly are these restructured loans classified? I mean, are they in stage 2 or they are considered as standard loans?
Yeah, I think, Umang, that's a good question. Before Srikanth answering that, please understand the color of 5-star. For last 20 years I have been in 5-star, we have not done a single restructuring. We have not given any ECLG or any kind of what regulator wanted to give it. We were not giving to our customers because customers were not willing for that. So keeping that in mind, this is the first restructuring 5-star has done in history, which is 1.86%. Of the overall numbers when the COVID hit, COVID-2 hit us in strongly both in health and wealth of our customers. So we want, being the first of its kind, we always want to be very conservative. We are very conservative in provision and we also want to be very conservative with this restructured book.
So Umang, just to give you, you know, some data points around this, why we are holding a provision. Yes, the restructured book is not performing, you know, similar to a normal book. The stage 1, the stage 2 is higher in the restructured book at about 60%. Given, but let me also clarify to you, these were given as moratorium for 6 months between April and September of last year. So that means the customer has actually been paying up from October. Now from October to September of this year, out of 12 installments, there are people who have paid 9 installments, but yes, there is a stress in the book. You know, there are people who have probably missed 2 to 3 installments in this period, and which is why, you know, we also decided that we should probably hold a slightly, you know, higher provision as compared to the normal book on this portfolio. And we will continue to, you know, monitor this portfolio and keep a, you know, keep a buffer provision on this so that, you know, it does not come and hit the P&L at a later point of time.
So just wanted to confirm on borrowings, you mentioned that 60 borrowings are fixed rate in nature. Given that 50% of our borrowings are bank borrowings, just wanted to understand which are the, I mean, are there any, is there any portion of the bank loans which are fixed rate in nature, and if fixed rate, for how long?
So, Umang, you know, banks have lent monies to us in the form of term loans. Banks have also participated in our securitization transactions. And, you know, they have also subscribed to the NCDs as part of the TLTRO, you know, during the first wave of COVID. So while the term loans obviously are linked to either MCLRs, most of them to MCLRs and very few to, you know, external benchmarks, the securitization and the NCD transactions are fixed in nature. And when I mean fixed, these are fixed for life. So, you know, there is not a, you know, fixed and a floating rate structure for a portion of tenure. The loans are fixed for life. The term loans are variable. But for the term loans, you know, out of the balance 50%, which are NCDs and securitization, are fully fixed for the life of the borrowing, and some portion of the bank borrowings, which are in the form of NCDs and securitization, are also fixed.
Understood. So the way to look at it is, you mentioned that your marginal cost of borrowing is closer to about 8.5. And also we have done an equity raise, so at least in the foreseeable future our cost of funds are unlikely to move up, or probably the overall cost of funds should only improve from here on before it starts stabilizing or starts moving up. I think we still have maybe a few more quarters for this trend to continue. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes, Umang, that's a fair assumption, because today our incremental cost of borrowings, so see, from two places you can get an impact on the cost of funds. One is repricing on the existing book, which is going to happen for, you know, 40% of the portfolio, you know, depending on how the rates move in the market. The second is on the incremental borrowings. Given that the incremental borrowings will be a larger proportion as compared to the book that will get repriced, and today while we are borrowing at 8.5 to 8.75, even if these rates are going to go up, and I'm sure they are going to go up, they are not going to sort of stay at 8.75, you know, forever. Given that our book cost of funds is at about 10.5, mathematically we will only be seeing some kind of a benefit that will come through. So for the foreseeable future, we don't envisage, you know, the book cost of funds significantly going up. You know, there may be some low-cost borrowings, especially those that were availed during the first wave of COVID through the PCG and the TLTRO route, which may come up for maturity, which may push the cost, you know, by a few basis points. But we are not expecting, but most likely, you know, those are going to be compensated by the low-cost incremental borrowings that we'll do. So we don't envisage, at least for the next few quarters, the borrowing on the cost of funds on the book to go up.
Understood. And just last question from my end is, given that COVID-related uncertainties behind asset quality and collections have kind of stabilized, what sort of growth are we envisaging, let's say, over next 2 to 3 years?
See, I think, as I said in opening remarks, we were growing at 15% in COVID 1 and 2. Pre-COVID, very healthy growth was being demonstrated from 2015 to 2020. We are hoping that, and not hoping, we are very strong feeling is the growth will be in a very healthy portion from now onwards. You will be seeing in quarter-on-quarter performance. If you see June versus September, we grew our AUM by 8% and disbursement close to 40%. So that's a clear indication that growth for this financial year and next two financial year will be very healthy. It will be very strong growth comparing to what we did in COVID periods.
Perfect. And just one data point, if you can provide, post-IPO, what would be our net worth if that number is what you can help me with?
So as of September, I think we were at about 4,006 crores. Pure OSF. There's no...
Thank you so much and good luck to the team. Thanks.
Thank you, Umang.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Shweta Daptatar from Elara Capital. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity and congratulations for a good set of earnings. So I have a couple of questions. The first one being, I'm just taking cue from the previous question. So while you mentioned the growth should remain healthy, but now that we have crossed the 6,000 odd mark, we are closer to 6,000 odd AUMs, so now is the time where you will see, where we'll see a lot of vintage and seasoning of portfolio happening. So what challenges do you perceive going forward? That's my first question.
So, Shweta, the last 2 years, you know, we have seen a lot of challenges. So, it's not that, you know, the book was only growing. There was quite a bit of seasoning with a smaller set of growth numbers for the last 2 years owing to COVID. Incrementally, we don't see any further challenges which is envisaged in the foreseeable future. We are adequately investing, you know, both in people and in terms of branch network. You will see that from our performance that for the first half of this year, we've already opened 52 branches. Generally, you know, we tend to open about 50 to 60 branches in a year. This year, we have opened already 52 branches in the first half of the year because we wanted to upfront opening of the branches in the first half. So that these branches start contributing towards the second half of the year. So you will not see the same set of branch opening in the second half, but you know, at least for the first half, if you are opening, you know, we are able to sweat out these assets by the time we are, you know, moving towards the year end. So there is a lot of optimism on the ground. We are seeing green shoots. We are seeing demand clearly picking up over the period. This year, this quarter, more than 600 people have joined 5-star. So with these kind of investments, I think, you know, we are confident of seeing a healthy rate of growth that Mr. Pathy mentioned. We are not currently looking at any you know, significant impact that could we are going to see from the market.
And just to add one point, for last 12 months, our collection efficiency is around 100%. So that clearly demonstrates that our underwriting, what 5-star has done, is clearly staking up very well, even during COVID-1 and COVID-2. So we don't see any risk from pursue for next few quarters and next few years. The growth will be healthy, stronger growth. We'll be demonstrating the stronger growth with the kind of profitability what we do and kind of quality what we deliver.
Sure. So my follow-up question to that is, so if I look at our headcount number, around 6,700 stands one of the highest. But also if I compare that with the AUM book, which is closer to 6,000 odd crores, this number looks pretty much on the higher side. So would you like to comment on productivity ratios? And also if you could give a breakup of this headcount in terms of sales, field force, and underwriting.
Yeah. So largely, Shweta, this number is a little elevated for this quarter, but you know, kindly keep in mind that we have opened 41 branches during this quarter alone. So, you know, so this is more an investment that we have done in this quarter, but like to like, you know, you will not see this kind of a elevated number. Normal branch openings in a quarter will be about 8-10 branches, so or maybe about 10-12 branches. But this quarter being a little bit different, you are seeing a little elevated numbers in terms of number of people who have joined. But like I said, this time the strategy was consciously to upfront the opening of our branches, so that we are able to get the productivity out before the end of the year, and that is what we have done. So in terms of overall manpower, we have given some breakup in the presentation that we have circulated there. Overall, if you look at the number of offices.
So, Shweta, you know, just giving you some numbers, I think, between the business and collections officers, which is the feet on street, we almost have about 4,680 people, you know, as of September 2022. You know, like, both Mr. Pathy and Ranga said, this is the biggest number, you know, given the, you know, coming on the back of an increased branch network. We have about 100 people on the supervisory side. You know, these could be area managers, regional managers, state heads, you know, and all those people. So, you know, put together, you know, the branch managers, the field officers, and supervisors are about 4,800 people out of the 6,700. Additionally, we have about 550 people on the credit side. You know, these are the people who do the field inspections, and the, you know, approval. As you would know, you know, we don't have any business person who have an approval power in Five Star. The entire approval power rests with credit. So put together, out of the 6,700 people, you have about 5,300, which are on the business and the credit side. The rest of it purely will come from, you know, the other support functions, primarily from operations and the cash management, the cashiers at the branches. You have about 700 people on the operations side. These are the people who do, you know, the data entry, the entire documentation at the branches and all that. And from a cashier's perspective, you know, people who collect the cash, make the receipts in the branch, that's another 450 people. So, you know, these are the primary drivers of the 6,700. In terms of the other support staff, you know, you'll have about 200-300 people.
Sure. So could you also share few productivity ratios? What has been your AUM per branch and profit per employee?
See, AUM per branch, you know, pre-COVID has sort of hovered around, you know, around the 17 crores or so. You should also just keep in mind that over the last, 5 to 7 years, Five Star has been growing significantly, both in terms of the portfolio and in terms of the number of branches. The number of branches will obviously be, you know, a little, ahead of time as compared to the portfolio. So if you look at in the past, I think we had hovered around the 17 crore portfolio at an overall level. Currently, it's about 16.3 crores or so. But let me just break that up a little bit for you. You'll also have to see the vintage of the branches and the productivity at a vintage level. Any branch, for example, I think this is something that we have given in the slide as well, slide number 10. Any branch which has actually crossed, 3 years or over 5 years, clearly gets into a complete productivity. So the branches which have a 3- to 5-year vintage, as of September, contributed 17.3 crores per branch, and branches which are over 5 years old was almost at about 29 crores. So it is, 84 branches are less than 1 year, and these are the branches which have got opened between September 2021 and September 2022. Those are contributing lesser. You know, the average AUM for these branches is only about 1.5 crores, because, you know, a lot of 40-odd branches got opened only in one quarter, so they would not have become productivity. But our steady state metric will be, you know, anywhere around the 17 to 18 crores kind of average per branch in a steady state scenario. But when we are in a growth phase, this number will look a little bit muted, but it should come to about 17, 18 crores once we reach a steady state and a steady state of growth.
Got it, sir. That's helpful. And one last question from my side. So we are primarily today present or concentrated in the southern belt, and we are expanding and moving out of home turf regions. So when you say contiguous expansion strategy, could you elucidate more into, you know, what is your strategy like, and what are the challenges you're seeing while foraying into newer markets, given the fact that we're slightly late, you know, in terms of penetration? Thank you.
Yeah, by contiguous expansion strategy, what we mean essentially is that we will never put up a branch which is more than 100 kilometers from an existing branch. So while we have presence in Central Indian geographies today, but we have expanded contiguously right from Tamil Nadu. So Tamil Nadu is our home state. We started in Tamil Nadu, and from there we gradually expanded both to Karnataka and Andhra Pradesh. From there we reached out to Telangana, and through Karnataka we reached out to Maharashtra, and from there to MP. So that's how I think we have traveled our journey so far. Our philosophy has always been that whenever we enter a new state, we maximum put up only 4 branches, and we will wait out for about 24 months to see how these 4 branches perform. You know, in the first 24 months, these branches will not carry a business target, but you know, we will want to rate these branches across a wide variety of parameters, including customer behavior, employee loyalty, the leadership team that we are able to form in a particular state, what happens if there is a loan default, you know, is there any political influence that we are able to see on the ground, is there any fraudulent documents which is sort of coming our way, and what are the legal nuances and operational challenges that we are able to see in the branches in the first 24 months. Only when we get the confidence that, you know, things are stacking up right for the first 24 months, then we take a call to rapidly expand beyond that. So the journey from 4 branches to 40 branches will be rapid. We will sort of do that in the next 18 to 24 months if we decide and if we are able to get confidence from the particular state. We have had the mixed experiences. So we have had the states where, you know, the first 24 months were extremely good, like the state of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana, where we have rapidly expanded. We've also had states where, you know, the first 24 months was not so good, like the case of Karnataka and Maharashtra. And in these states, unless we are able to pinpoint in terms of what went wrong, whether it is people, whether it is location, whether it is customer selection or, you know, leadership team that we are able to form in a particular state, unless we get that right, we will not press the pedal of acceleration in a particular state. So a case in point is between Maharashtra and Madhya Pradesh, both the states started out in 2018. The experience has been mixed between these two states. We have close to 40 branches in Madhya Pradesh today, and we just have about 5 branches in Maharashtra. So the strategy clearly is going to be that we will expand in areas that is strong for us, where we are having really good leadership team across the business and collection verticals. So for the foreseeable future, that is about 3 to 5 years from now, we will continue to penetrate and grow stronger in the southern geographies, because this is the place where we have more than 15 years of track record. Really good teams have seen at least 5 cycles of, you know, giving loans and collecting it back profitably on time. So you will see the significant growth of Five-Star in the next at least 3 to 5 years coming in from south. But that said, of course, the proportion will drop. Today, south contributes about 93%. Few years back, this was 100%. Today, it is 93%. So the proportion may drop to about, you know, 85 to 80 over the next 3 to 5 years. But, you know, the newer states are not for the next 5 years of growth, but, you know, it takes time for us to stabilize and understand each state. So we will be putting up seed branches in each of those states, understanding the nuances, and these states are extremely important for the growth beyond 5 years.
Sure, sir. That's very helpful. Thank you for the elaborate response.
Thank you.
We have the next question from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks for the opportunity. So firstly, a data keeping question on the gross NPA as per the revised RBI norms. What would be the gross NPA for us as of September 2022?
So Nidesh, the revised circular comes into effect from 1st October, 2022. So, you know, we are not disclosing that number for, for September. But having said that, we have been, while, as part of our road shows and whenever we have been saying, given that RBI now had given us time, in the entire about 9 months of this calendar year, where, it has helped us fine-tune our internal system as well as, set the expectations right in the minds of the borrowers. Our belief is that, in the steady state scenario or once, numbers have started coming in from October, we believe that the difference between the gross stage 3 and the NPA as per revised RBI norms should be around 100 basis points.
Sure, sir, sure. So what I understand that this number was pretty high, let's say 6 months or 3-4 quarters back. So what we have done to reduce this number so drastically, given the customer profile that we have, will not be able to bring two EMIs, more than one EMI at one go. So how on the ground we have been able to improve this number so drastically in last 3-4 quarters?
Yeah, Nivesh, this is a very important question. See, as Srikanth said, we got a time of 9 months when we represented RBA. RBA took it in a positive way and gave all the NBFCs 9 months deferring the circular. See, from five-star perspective is, as I said, we take the customer from informal segment. There is no due date concept from informal segment. There is no due date when a guy is taking a loan from moneylender. So when he moves from moneylender to five-star, his mind still says it's a due month rather than due date. And we were also comfortable in the earlier regime that if a customer pays within that month, we are very happy on it. But when the circular came us all suddenly on November 12th, so it needed some time for us to go back to the customer and explain the importance of the due date rather than due month. So for last 9 months, we are able to see a very, very good traction that customer is able to appreciate the logic of paying on due date rather than paying the during the month. So that has moved from, if I say in September, almost close to 90-93% of the customers are paying on the due date because the culture has changed at the ground level, not only from 5-star, all the NBFCs have moved the culture from due month to due date. So that also has helped the sector very well. In October month onwards, it is stacking up very well. In fact, we have crossed touching 95% of the customers paying on the due date. So as we see the first quarter, that is a December quarter onwards, the difference between the gross stage 3 and the circular NPA will not be more than 100 bips is what Srikanth just said.
Sure. Secondly, if we could give some details about the customer segment in terms of how many of the customers that we are originating will be new to credit, what could be the distribution of CIBIL score, let's say customers more than 750 CIBIL scores or customers between 350 to 750 or some data around that could be helpful.
So 25% of our customers will be absolutely new to credit, having not taken any loans from the formal segment. But 75% of our customers will have a credit bureau footprint. But typically we see them having footprint in one of the following three products. It could be a microfinance loan, it could be a two-wheeler loan, or it could be a gold loan. So these are the three primary products that the customers have taken. Most of these customers would not have taken a loan of a similar ticket size from another lender or for a similar product that we have. So for at least 3/4 of the customers that we finance, we will be the first lender to give them a ticket size between 3 to 5 lakhs for a business loan purpose, which is secured. The other products that they would have taken is mostly not based on underwriting, but it's based on a product-based lending, be it gold or be it vehicles or be it a microfinance loan. So I think that's it. We rely more on high mark scores rather than CIBIL scores. So I think just given the nature of the customers and the loans that they could have taken, scores are a little bit, misguiding in this segment, in the sense that somebody could have just taken a microfinance loan of 20,000 rupees and could have a CIBIL score of 750 plus. It may mean nothing when we are taking a call for a 7-year tenure on this customer for a loan ticket size, which is much higher than a microfinance loan. So, we don't look at spread of scores. For us, what is more important is the character assessment that we do on the ground and the cash flows that we're able to get it. So while the scores are important, but I think the way we look at the scores is if there is a default, what is the kind of the product in which he has defaulted? If it's a secured product, you know, if it's a at least if it's a loan ticket where at least he has taken 1 to 2 lakhs and then there is a, you know, kind of a default, we take those more seriously than any kind of a, you know, score which is emanating from an ordinary product.
Sure. And the last and the thirdly, sir, on the profitability, so sir, how should we think about how do we internally think about the sustainable profitability from the customers that we are generating? 7-8% ROA in your mind is reasonable, and I am coming from a context that in some other segments we have seen lenders making super normal profit of 7-8% ROA for 2 to 3 years. Then competition came in, and then the ROAs and growth both have completely gone away from those segments. So shouldn't it be a good strategy to operate at 18-20% yield and make a segment extremely extremely unattractive for any new incumbents? We are getting to know that a lot of new NBFCs are trying to enter in the segment. Your point is valid, that it's a difficult segment to crack. A lot of these companies will not be successful, but why even make the segment so attractive that new companies will eye the segment to operate?
Yeah, it's a very good point, Nivesh. As we speak today, our ROAs are at the north of 8%. Because we are well capitalized and our debt to the capital is low. So hence you get a lot of profits from capital because there is no interest servicing part on it. But at a steady state, we don't think that 8% is doable here. We can guide you a steady state ROA of around 6 to 6.5% with when a leverage hitting is around 3 to 4 times. So that is the steady state guidance that we are giving, and we don't say that 8% ROA will stay here, but not because of the competition that the ROA will get reduced, but I think from a reasonable lender, we wanted to also bring down the lending rate wherever we get the benefit both from borrowing cost and operational efficiency going up. We wanted to pass on that benefit to the customer. That's the stand what Five Star has taken. Yes, as Ranga also said, most people wanted to get into the segment, but people find out after getting into the segment, it is not so easy to operate and easy to understand the customer's cash flow character and the collateral, what they are willing to give it to us. Assessing that is a big challenge. So not on competitive intensity, but on being a very responsible lender, we wanted to bring down our lending rate. And as the leverage picks up, as you pay more interest, the ROA also starts to drop down from 8% to around 6 to 6.5%. That's our guidance we wanted to give.
Sure. And sir, do we charge prepayment penalty to our customers if they do BT out?
No, we don't charge any prepayment penalty for anything beyond 12 months. So only if the prepayment happens within 12 months, there is a penalty of 1%. But beyond that, there is no charge.
So what is the thought process behind that? Because I see that all other lenders charge pretty hefty prepayment penalty. There is a fixed rate loan. On a fixed rate loan, there is no prepayment penalty is allowed. So what is the thought process behind that?
I think the thought process really is that what we are serving is a business customer. So they will always have, access to chunkier and good cash flows, you know, after a good cycle or a good season. You can't prevent the customer from, you know, coming back and repaying to you either partly or fully. We have always seen that the customer appreciates this. We give them a max tenure of 7 years. So most of our loans, while we can give a loan for 2 years, but we actually extend the loan for 7 years because it eases the EMI pressure on the customer. Most customers will be more optimistic about their cash flows and they may want to take a loan for 2 or 3 years, but that's detrimental to them because, you know, if let's say one season goes bad, they may not be in a position to sort of pay that higher EMI. So our strategy is always give the loan for a max tenure of 7 years, but allow them to prepay whenever they have access to cash flows, good cash flows. And that's why we have also kept our 7 year rates are lower than 2 year rates. The 7 year rates is at 24% and 2 year rates is 26%. So we naturally nudge the customers to take a longer tenure loan. Having nudged the customers to take a longer tenure loan, you can't stop them from prepaying because that's not fair to the customers. So they will prepay and they deeply appreciate this aspect about 5-star, which is why, you know, they will prepay, and we have seen multiple customers when they have good access to cash flows, they'll prepay the loan fully and they will come back probably, you know, in 2 months and then take a loan again from 5-star when there is a need. So we have not kept any resistance here for a prepayment charge beyond 12 months.
Sure. And lastly, just one more data point question on the attrition rate. How is the attrition rate at the ground level that we are seeing?
Yeah, the attrition rate for us, the attrition rate that we measure and which is most important for us is from the branch managers and above. That's the touch point on the ground, because the branch managers are the knowledge centers in a branch and they hold the culture and they hold the customers, you know, right from start to finish. At that level, our attrition rates are between 8 to 9%, probably one of the lowest in the industry. We give extremely good career path to to our employees of 5-star. So they tend to stay with us for the long term from that point. But if you were to go below the branch manager level, just at an officer level, there the attrition rate is in line with the market, somewhere between 25 to 30% at the officer level. But anybody above the branch manager, we'll be at one of the lowest in the market at somewhere between 8 to 9%.
Sure. Thank you for answering my question.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Piran Engineer from CLSA. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. And, you know, some of these might be basic because I'm new to the company. Just wanted to understand one thing as to how you all ensure a stage 2 does not slip into stage 3. Because if I look at your 30 to 60 buckets or 60 to 90 buckets, they're reasonably elevated, like most NBFCs are what you can expect. But then the 90 plus bucket is 1%. So, if you could just talk a bit about, you know, what sort of steps you all take to ensure that the 60 DPD loan does not become 90 DPD, that would be really helpful.
So thank you, Pinar. I think this is a very important question, and, you know, we will continue to explain this as long as, you know, it takes. The first point for us that we measure is, when does a customer move from stage 1 to stage 2? That is important. I think we are very clear that if it's an early movement, if it's a quick mortality in our parlance, which is any account which is turning into an arrear or it is turning into an NPA. A quick mortality for us is defined as any account turning into an NPA in the first year, and a quick arrear is defined as any account turning into an arrear in the first 6 months. These are taken extremely seriously by us, and we go right till the point of, you know, doing a full-fledged staff accountability analysis right from the person who sourced the file, the person who underwrote the file, and the final approval. Is there anything that we have slipped? You know, things can go, if it's beyond our control, it's fine. Like, you know, customer has met with an accident, you know, or there is a, you know, natural calamity in that particular area. That's different. But if it's anything related to customer-related aspects, those are seen extremely carefully. So I think if you were to look at this part, most of the stage 1 and stage 2 part of 5-star is not customers who are going to be in the early part of their lifetime within 5-star. So now you have to just understand and put yourself in the shoes of the customer. Most of our customers are earn and pay customers. 65% of our customers are single shop owners. So, you know, these are people who have to open their shop every day, earn and pay the EMI. They don't have access to significant savings. So given that, there will always be something which is happening around his life. You know, it could be something good or bad which is happening in his life, maybe a marriage in his family, maybe a death in his family, some health emergency. So you will see, we will see that, you know, beyond the 24-month period, when something happens to his family and he has been extremely prompt, you know, on paying his EMI, still that point of time, when he has a genuine reason and then he's explaining that to the branch, you can't turn a blind eye towards that. You can't say, I don't know what happens in your family, you will have to pay the EMI. So in such circumstances, we actually allow the customer and give a formal permission for him not to pay an EMI. It could happen in the 25th month or the 28th month. So a customer slips from stage 1 to stage 2 at that point of time. What we measure for such customers is that in the subsequent month or in the subsequent months from that point, we will make sure that he is at least servicing one EMI and staying in the same bucket. He may not have the wherewithal to repay two EMIs and come back to current, but that's perfectly fine with us. The way we think about it is that somebody has delayed one EMI in like 24 months, it's fine. the one EMI will be paid along with the delayed interest, or you know, the two EMIs will be paid along with the delayed interest when he is settling the loan. When we are sitting on a collateral which is self-occupied residential property, there is neither going to be an interest loss income here or a credit loss situation. So we are fine with that situation. But for us, what is most important is he servicing a subsequent EMI? So most of the customers whom you are seeing in the you know, stage 2 bucket, the stabilization levels in that bucket is extremely important, and that's what it depends. But when a customer moves, you know, from 31 to 60 and actually moves to the 61 to 90 day bucket, we cut off this flexibility to the customer because we have already given him two excuses. And so the sort of culture within you know, the customers, and they have been explained well, is that yeah, if there is a genuine reason why you are delaying, that's fine. But I think if you have already taken two excuses, we will not permit you to go beyond the 61 to 90 days. So there we will make sure that, you know, through our concerted collection efforts and educating the customer, we are arresting any further flows from 61 to 90 and beyond. So that's one reason why, yeah, you will see something in stage 2, but consistently across years, across cycles, we have not seen this slipping and moving forward to a 90 plus bucket.
Okay, fair enough. And just in terms of just a couple of numbers related questions, pre-COVID we used to operate at about 17-18% provision coverage ratio, which has now been buffered up to about 45%. How should we think about modeling this over a steady state period?
So, Piran,
you know, 17-18 honestly also seems to be a bit low for the category of customers you are catering to.
No, I think the, you know, understood your question. See, when we all transitioned from IGAAP to Ind AS, you know, there was a methodology that was built, and we were sort of, you know, following that methodology without building any kind of an overlay on any of these assets. So it was purely derived from a probability of default and loss given default. You know, our belief was that, you know, there was not much of flexibility to build, you know, overlays and incremental provisions pre-COVID. So that is why if you see, given that our probability of default is one of the lowest and our loss given default is also very low, because, you know, we managed to collect almost close to the contracted IRR even on a stage 3 asset, the provision coverage at that point of time was 20% or a little lower than 20% on stage 3 assets. But when, you know, COVID hit and, you know, we started creating the overlays across the various buckets, you know, more so on stage 2 and stage 3. We also, you know, found ways to build, you know, more provisions on stage 3 assets, because if you just go back a year before the adoption of Ind AS, our provision coverage was, you know, we had actually taken it up to 34-35% on stage 3, you know, on the 90 plus assets. But it naturally dropped down because of the methodology of ECL. But post-COVID, we have also, you know, found ways to sort of build some overlays on these assets. While in the last couple of quarters, it has sort of moved a little bit, you know, to 39 and 44. Our guidance view is that this number will be at around 35% in a steady state scenario, which is what you should probably model for.
Okay, got it. That answers it. And just lastly, out of your 2.5 lakh customers, and I think you're just asking a previous question in a different way, how many of these would be first time to 5-star, and how many of them would have, say, would be repeat customers, have taken their second loan or third loan from 5-star?
So we measure that in two ways, Piran. The first is the number of customers who have taken a top-up loan from us, and the top-up loan is defined as customers who are running two loans parallelly with 5-star. We have a pretty strict top-up policy. We don't extend the top-up loans in the first 24 months. Somebody has to have a good track record in the first 24 months. More importantly, they have to be a zero DPD customer for them to be eligible for a top-up loan at that point of time. So we will do a fresh assessment of the customer at that stage. If there is room both in LTV and in the DBR ratios and the track record is good, we will extend a top-up loan to that customer. So that's about 10%. 10% of our portfolio of customers will be running two loans together. That's the top-up loan. So if you were to look at repeats, it will be about 15%. But just mind you that, you know, the average tenure is about 5 years. So if you were to look at 5 years back, 5-star in 2017 was just about 500 crores AUM. So repeats will come over a period of time. You know, but you have to see that in the context of what we were 5 years back, and those are the customers who will be coming for repeats at this point of time. It is a healthy number.
So you're basically saying about 35,000-40,000 customers are repeat customers?
Yeah. So, you know, we are just breaking that up. Either people who are repeat customers running multiple points would be about, say, 20,000 or 25,000. There will be another, you know, 20,000 or so who have closed their old loan, given a little bit of time, and then come back to the company for another loan. They have closed it out of their own sources, but having had the need to, for funds again, they have come back to the company. So put together, you are right, about 40, you know, 40,000-50,000 customers would be some form of repeat customers.
So that's actually quite a high number, because 5 years back, that would have been your total customer pool, right? The way I'm trying to think is that most of the customers who would have taken a loan from you are, you know, retaking another loan at the end of their five-year tenure. Is that a right way to think about it?
No, no, Piran, that's why I gave you this breakup. The breakup of repeats is different from the breakup of top-ups. Somebody becomes eligible for a top-up at the end of 2 years and not 5 years. So you can't look at a five-year back number and then compare, put both together and then see it. So 2 years back, we were still 4,000 crores in 2020, right? So they are all eligible for a top-up potentially. So that's a good mix. And if you split that and then see only repeats, it's about, you know, 15%, which comes overall.
So Piran, even there, this principle will hold good. Because the customer who's actually prepaying, let us say, in 2 years, 2.5 years, or 3 years, comes back, you know, after a 6-month period. And so it is not like every customer prepays only after 5 years. What we are saying is, because of the prepayment, the average tenure of the portfolio drops to 4.5-5 years, but people are going to be prepaying at points of time, right? So, you know, anybody who was there, let's say, 2.5 years back, could have prepaid the loan by March, could have come and taken a loan in September. Nothing stops them from doing that.
Correct. Okay, I'm a bit confused. I'll take it offline, but if I can just ask this question: this 15% repeat customers includes the 10% top-up customers, or it's over and above that?
It's over and above.
Over and above, right? Okay, fine. Yeah. That explains. Thanks a lot, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Gaurav Kochar from Mirae Asset Managers. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Hi, good morning, team. Thanks for taking my question, and congratulations on the quarter. A couple of questions. Firstly, if I split the number of branches that you've, so roughly 50 would be in the newer geographies and 300 would be in the older geographies. In FY 2022, you had given the breakup of super branches and the normal branches, so roughly around 140 branches were super branches. My question is, how long does it take for a branch to turn into a super branch? And so wanted some, you know, cost ratios. So the cost to AUM at a company aggregate level is around 6%. Just wanted some sense on, you know, what is the initial cost to asset for a branch before it turns into a super branch?
So the super branch eligibility comes to a branch after 24 months of good performance. So we will not make a super branch within 24 months. So at the end of 24 months, firstly, we will see what is the team that has formed in the branch, and we will assess it from all parameters in terms of ability to do good business, good collections, loyalty factor, no frauds in the first 24 months, no bad documents, no bad selection of customers. So with all that, a branch becomes eligible for a super branch. Once it becomes a super branch, we double the teams, essentially. So till then, we could have operated with about 5 officers. It becomes a super branch, we will give 10 officers to that branch. Till then, a branch can source files only from a 25-30 kilometer radius. The moment it becomes a super branch, they can go up to 50 kilometers radius from a branch. A branch would have definitely broken even somewhere between the 6-9 month time frame for us from the time of putting up the branch. So all those branches which are becoming a super branch would have definitely broken even within the first year itself, but they become eligible for a super branch only after the second year.
Sure. And so my question was with regards to the cost to AUM. At an aggregate level, it's around 6%. Can you give some color around how does that, for a branch, you know, how does it transition initially, and, you know, once it becomes a super branch, there would be some benefits of operating leverage and scale. So how should we look at this number, let's say 2 years out, depending on the branch rollout strategy? And in your view, what kind of, branches?
So, Gaurav, I think the first data point to be kept in mind is that any branch turns, breaks even at the end of 6 months. So from there onwards, it starts contributing to the profitability. Obviously, in the initial stages of the, of the branch, this OPEX to AUM is going to be higher because the operating leverage is still not kicked in. So our belief is that, and if you look at the branch vintage that we have given to you, in the distribution strategy slide, which is slide number 10 of the presentation, we have about 222 branches which are actually, greater than 3 years old. So our belief is the operating leverage reaches the optimal level, at a company, about 6% or so, or maybe slightly lower than that, at around the 3 year mark. So a branch which is at about 3 years and with a portfolio of something like 15 to 18 crores at an average sort of, reaches the optimal mark at 6% level. Anything which is less than 3 years is going to be, slightly higher and would reach a, 6% level when it comes to, when it comes to a 15, 16 crore kind of an AUM.
Okay. To just summarize all of this, let's say in 2 to 3 years time frame, where do you see the total number of branches? And if the mix is more skewed towards more than 3 year branches, if the branch rollout strategy kind of slows down over the next couple of years, given that we've already upfronted the investments, in that context, where do you see a steady state cost to assets or cost to AUM?
So Gaurav, our idea is to put up at least 50 to 60 branches per year. This year is a little higher given the fact that the last 2 years were muted with COVID. So this year we will go to about 70 branches. We have already opened 52 in the first half of the year. But steady state, I think 50 to 60 branches is a good number which we can digest without any compromises on the culture or the quality of people that we are able to take in each of those branches. Like I said, the majority of these branches will come in south, so which is the existing, areas of strength that we have. Maybe about 20% of these branches will come in the non-south region. So given all this, the proportion of new branches vis-a-vis the total set of branches will definitely drop. So from a cost-to-income perspective, Srikanth will just cover that.
So, Gaurav, today about 65% of our branches are greater than 3 years. And, obviously, as we keep adding, this proportion will definitely go up. This should inch to something like 70-75% over the next few years. And each of these branches are going to be operating at about 5.5-6%. So there is some bit of operating efficiency possible. But if you are looking at a very significant operational efficiency, I don't think that is going to, come through, because Five Star is already operating at a, one of the best productivities. So we believe that from 6%, this number can range anywhere around 5-5.5% in a steady state scenario.
Cost to income?
Cost to income will range at around 35%, where we are already at. OPEX to AUM of about 5-5.5%, because the AUM will keep growing, and the cost to income of about 35% is what we would guide you for in a steady state scenario.
Got it, sir. Thanks for answering. And then just last question, data keeping question. You mentioned the total restructured book outstanding is 1.18. Is that a gross number or a net number?
Gross number, 65 crores, about 65, 66 crores is the gross number, on which we hold a provision of about 28-30 crores, which is a 50% provision.
Sure, and this provision is already part of your stage 2 ECL, is that correct?
It is part of stage 1, stage 2, stage 3 ECL, whichever place the assets align.
All right. And any other provision that you're carrying outside of ECL, any COVID or any contingent?
No. For us, everything is built through the ECL methodology, Gaurav. So we don't create any incremental provisions like the contingency buffer and all that. Our overall provision as of September 22 was at about 101.6 crores, representing 1.77% of our overall AUM.
Right. Okay. Perfect, sir. Thanks for answering my question. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Franklin Morris from Equentis Wealth Advisory. Please go ahead, sir.
Sir, thanks for taking my question. So, in terms of your shift to the new RBI regulations, you mentioned there could be an increase in gross NPAs. So, just wanted to understand, will there be a corresponding provisioning impact as well?
So, Franklin, we are not envisaging any significant provision impact coming through, because some of these cases which potentially could become an RBA NPA but not a gross stage 3, we have already provided for at more than or equal to 10%. So from an RBA perspective, we are not envisaging any provision increase coming on account of the additional 100 basis points of NPA that will come through.
Okay. And in terms of your restructuring book, what is the collection efficiency?
We are today seeing collection efficiencies on that book of about 70 to 75%. There are slippages. Like I said, stage 1 assets are at about 30%, stage 2 assets are at about 60%, about 8-9% is stage 3. So there is definitely, you know, lower collection efficiency on that book as compared to the normal book. But you know, more from a collection efficiency perspective, we are giving you a bucket wise data between stage 1, stage 2 and stage 3.
Okay, and what is the moratorium percentage in this book?
So our restructuring was only in the form of moratorium, which we gave between for the installments falling between April 2021 and September 2021. So from October 2021, people have already started paying and moving DPDs if they are not paying. So you know, you have a post restructuring repayment behavior of 1 year.
Okay, so basically nothing is in the moratorium as of now. So whatever collection efficiencies are there from probably the coming quarter will be fully paying.
It was already in the last 4 quarters, and coming quarters again will be, you know, based on actual demand on all these loans.
So just to clarify, we just gave 6 months moratorium for all the restructuring what we have done in June of last year. It's very short moratorium.
And the overall restructuring book is only 1.18%.
Sure. In terms of your car, you know, there has been a reduction of about 7% on a 6 monthly basis. So just wanted to understand, like, maybe you know, on an annualized basis, can we see maybe 10 to 15% of car reduction, depending on your AUM growth?
Yeah, I think you can. So see, car is a function of two things, Frankson. One is you know, the kind of investments that we maintain at points of time. So, you know, in the, especially you just go back 6 months before, pretty much, you know, FDs or mutual funds were, you know, yielding similar rates. So, you know, we were pretty putting in FDs because they don't carry a risk weight, whereas investments carry a risk weight. But as you see, you know, currently we are probably putting a little more, you know, on the investment, the mutual funds side. So it is a function of one, the growth in the portfolio and the growth in the balance sheet. It is also a question of, you know, how your liquidity is sort of kept, either in the form of mutual funds or FDs. But I think, you know, about 10 to 15% reduction in car on a year-on-year basis is something that that could be looked at. But having said that, you know, this is a ratio that is at a very high level for us. So we'll also have to, you know, we'll have to see how it sort of pans out as the portfolio starts growing.
And just to clarify, don't keep car as your point of reference for justifying the growth. As Srikanth said, investments done can also bring down the car. So as I said in other question, you will see very healthy growth from Five Star the quarters to come.
Okay. And my last question is, you know, recently we have seen that the FTX issue blowing up, wherein, you know, Sequoia has been you know, impacted, and they had to write down their investment. And Sequoia is a major investor in our company as well. So have we got any confirmation from them, like, you know, whether they would continue to hold their investments, or is there any threat of them, you know, exiting?
So frankly, that is absolutely beyond the scope of discussion. This is what, who got impacted is Sequoia US. I think the way these funds are structured are very different. We will have no impact, you know, from this event.
And Franklin, just to give you a perspective, Sequoia is also one of the institutional promoters as part of this IPO. So, you know, that also sort of signals their intent to stay with the company for a longer period of time.
Sure, that's very helpful. Thanks a lot for that.
Thank you.
As that was the last question for today, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Lakshmipathy Deenadayalan for closing comments. Over to you, Chairman, sir.
Yeah, thank you for all the participants who participated in the first conference call of Five Star. As we have been speaking with many people from the road shows and calls, I think we will take more time to explain our business model, because as I said in the opening comments, this is a very niche segment, both in quantum of the loan and the tenure of the loan that we give it to our customers is very unique. So we keep explaining this in more calls to come. Just to close a closing comment, please expect a good growth, good quality and good profitability to continue in Five-Star. Thanking you and meeting you in the next conference call, which is Q3 of December. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. On behalf of Five-Star Business Finance Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you very much, sir. Have a great day.